My name is Tom, and I am an alcoholic. Oh my! Well, I'm very moved by anybody who's able to get up in front of a group and just not fall down from sheer terror. So, newcomers, those of you who were called for it, I hope you don't feel used badly by this. It's good for you, and it's real good for us. When I was a day sober, I wasn't moving a lot. So I just thought I'd mention that. I think you look gorgeous. You're wonderful. Oh, my. I want to start off with another obscure section of the book. Last week, I mentioned one little part that I found kind of amusing. The humor in AA, you know. This section used to be read on a pretty regular basis when I first got sober in Berkeley, and it was kind of alternated with Chapter 5. You could read Chapter 5, and everybody did, the 12 steps, and then they said, well, you could also read from More About Alcoholism, that wonderful list that I wish we'd put to music one day. You know, switching from brandy to scotch and natural wines and so forth. And then this thing, Chapter 11, A Vision for You. Parts of the book get canonized. Parts of them become very familiar to us. One part is the end of Chapter 11, where it says here with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir humming in the background, our book is meant to be suggestive only. Oh, beautiful boy. So, you know the convention's over when they read that. But the problem is, when I hear some things read over and over and over again, I no longer hear them. That's my problem with it. So, I need to read some stuff. And this Chapter 11, A Vision for You, it says, for most normal folks, whoever they are, doesn't say that. Drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. It is joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good. Now, I'm very glad we have this in our literature because it makes it very clear that we're not prohibitionists. We aren't against demon rum. We're nervous about demon rum in us. That's where we get nervous. But if you can drink and show up for work and not pee on yourself, we're very impressed. And as far as we are concerned, you can do that forever. We're just delighted. We don't know how you do it. Heaven knows we've tried hard enough and long enough, but we're just amazed. And most people who drink are people like that. I didn't know any of them, but there are a lot of them out there. Then it says, but not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The old pleasures were gone. They were but memories. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. Yeah, that's absolutely true. That paragraph summarizes my drinking career. It doesn't mention some of the places I ended up and some of the thoughts I thought, but I started off having a wonderful time and ended up having a miserable time and didn't know how it happened. I was as baffled by it as anybody else was. Next paragraph. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. Yeah, me too. I considered myself a pretty sociable person, and I was a barroom drinker as long as I could be. But those options kind of ran out. And I found that when I drank, I couldn't guarantee my behavior. This is one of the rules of thumb for do you have a drinking problem. You know, I would have a couple of social drinks and I would never know what would happen next. Maybe nothing. Maybe anything. Maybe I would just go home and pass out quietly. Maybe I would decide to drive to the Mexican border for breakfast. I just didn't know what would happen. I might be real friendly. I might kind of get inappropriately amorous with people I just met. I might become enraged and yell and scream and shout and be a real creep for hours and hours and hours standing on street corners preaching to nervous people. Any of those things. So those are little signs from God that you may have a drinking problem. Okay. So as my behavior got weirder, I withdrew more because I didn't want to be around people who knew me for sure. But then even people. I had an embarrassing run-in with the Berkeley Police Department one night. And you have to be going out of your way to be stopped by the Berkeley Police Department. But I was going out of my way. And I was screaming about the superior of my community and that his parents weren't married and that I was going to kill him. And evidently, I was pretty convincing, so they stopped me and we had this conversation. What's the point of that? The point of that was, that was happening more and more frequently, and I was with a friend of mine at the time. And the next morning, it became clear to me that I had to choose between friends, people who loved me, and my drinking. I chose my drinking. You know, I mean, every so often, all my friends would lose their sense of humor, you know, and I'd have to find new ones. But drinking was what I trusted. I mentioned last week that one of the processes that many of us go through when we get sober is we go through grief. We really do lose our best friend, even though our best friend was strangling us. But it was, you know, my friend. We withdrew from society, from life itself. We shut down. Instead of living life, we live life. My sponsor is a hopeless alcoholic with about 15 or 18 years of sobriety. Pathetic, hopeless alcoholic, I keep reminding him. And if God's grace can work for him, God's grace can work for anybody. And so I'm always glad to see him sober. That's not the point. The point is, he was talking about higher power and God and life. And this lady got it to share. And she was not from any particular religious background at all. Sometimes folks from no background are freer. And she was trying to describe what her drinking was like. And she said when she started drinking as an adult, it didn't bother her very much. And then the more she drank, the less active she became over time. So that over a couple of years, she was doing less and less. And she was going to fewer and fewer places. And she was getting involved in fewer and fewer things. And finally, she didn't leave her apartment. That's where she stayed. And her apartment had a living room and a bathroom and a kitchen and a bedroom. And for a long time, she did all the appropriate things in the appropriate places. She dined in the dining room and bathroomed in the bathroom and slept in the sleeping room. But her drinking continued, and her circle of life got even smaller until finally she only stayed in the living room. And in the living room was a green couch. And she pretty much moved onto the green couch. And that's where the last couple of years of her drinking left her. Life was that big. And she slept on the green couch, and she did bathroom things on the green couch, and she entertained visitors, few though there were, on the green couch. And that was her whole life. And she never left it. Somehow connected with AA. Somehow people came, kind of cleaned her up, dusted her off, got her to a meeting, and she went to a meeting and heard all this God talk. And she couldn't relate. She had no idea who God was. and she was trying to figure it all out. I've talked to two people today in great pain who are busy trying to figure it all out. So painful. Anyway, she was busy trying to figure out who this God was, the higher power and stuff. And she finally had about 6 months of sobriety, and she'd just come back from an AA meeting, her 10 millionth in 6 months, and she walked into her front room of the apartment, and she suddenly got this insight as to who God was. God was the one who kept her off the green couch. That's who God was. Our lives get real small when we're drinking. Last night I was with some friends of mine, in fact, even relatives of mine. And one of these persons with whom I am blood related is living on the couch. I mean, he gets up and goes to work, but he lives on the couch, and that's what he's able to do. Not very productive, not very happy. Things just kind of shut down. Yes, it says so right here in the book. As we became subjects of King Alcohol. Now, this is written badly. If I was a teacher for a long time, and if a sophomore English student turned the next paragraph into me, I'd circle a lot of it in red and send it back to you and say, try harder. It uses a lot of big, uncommon words and sentences that go on for just too long. Bill was very, very inspired at this point. He said, as we became subjects of King Alcohol, capital K, capital H, capital A, shivering denizens. I looked it up. That's a citizen. Why didn't he say citizen? Of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. Now, the first time I heard that, I didn't notice the bad English. What I noticed was chilling vapor loneliness came out there, and I kind of sat up straight when they were talking. It said it thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Now, I really thought that I was the only alcoholic in North America that did that. No one talked about that kind of stuff where I live. How many sordid places did you end up in last night? That was not breakfast conversation. It was real strange. I would drink. Sometimes nothing would happen. I would drink, and sometimes some very odd things would happen. And I can remember having a tremendous sense of shame and guilt and embarrassment about this stuff, and I never thought anyone else did things like that. My big surprise was to realize that in 1939 in Akron, Ohio, someone was doing the same stuff. And I was so relieved, because I had this long suspicion that if you knew who I was, you'd ask me to leave. And very reassuring. This was the first part of the big book I identified with. I hadn't done any steps yet. And they kept reading them to me at meetings, you know, but they were the future. This was the past. I just sat up even straighter. Momentarily, and I want to say one other thing about these sordid places, understanding, companionship, and approval. If any of us have met there before, hello, it's nice to see you here. Just to welcome you to the fellowship. You'll meet a lot of people you never thought you'd see again. Using code names, you know, and so forth.